Hello, this is Anil Kumar and welcome to Back to the Bible radio broadcast. Today, as we continue Dr. John Neufeld's series, Life Lessons from David, the man who would be the king, we will discover an important principle of faith in a message entitled Refusing to Run Ahead of God. So let's go back to the Bible as we turn to our text in 1 Samuel chapter 23 verse 15 to chapter 24 verse 22.
You know, some time ago I heard what I thought was a very humorous story. A pastor with a limited income had been praying to the Lord for furniture, and he chanced upon a furniture truck from a store that had left a very nice couch by accident by their site. The workers had forgotten to load it. The pastor took this as a gift from God and took it home. But of course, it was no gift from God. It was a test of his faith, and he'd failed. You know, whatever faith is, it cannot be divorced from ethics, from right and wrong. You can't claim God's provision and break his law. David would face this in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Most of us know the account. Saul is back from pursuing the Philistines, and David is in the back of the very cave where Saul has come to relieve himself. David has 600 men. Saul has 3,000 men. And David is not seeking to fight Saul, but Saul is seeking to kill David. But here is Saul by himself and vulnerable. David's men see the hand of God in this. 1 Samuel 24, verse 4, we read, "And the men of David said to him, 'Here is the day in which the Lord said to you, Behold, I give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you.'" Now, before we go on, I think we should take a note here that the Lord never said that he would give Saul into David's hand. Never. Indeed, the Lord had anointed Saul as king, and who was David to challenge the sovereign hand of God? But David, as we know, simply cuts off the corner of Saul's robe, and then speaking to his men, he tells them, I'm reading verse 6, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed." This verse needs to be understood. Here's what David knew. Saul was not on the throne by accident. He was chosen by the sovereign will of God. And even though Saul had become an evil man, David had to respect the choice of God. It's called faith, trust in God when things don't make sense. And this brings us to the point of this passage. From the perspective of David's men, God had delivered Saul into their hands. That for them was clear. But from David's perspective, God had brought Saul into the cave in order to test whether they, and David in particular, could respect God's sovereign choice and his leadership. I love what Gordon Keddie wrote. "An open door is not in itself proof of God's will." Or listen to Arthur Pink. "One stroke of his sword," says Pink, "and David steps onto the throne. Farewell to poverty. Farewell to the life of a hunted man. Reproaches, sneers, defeat would cease, and adulations and triumphs and riches would be his. But this would come at the sacrifice of faith, at the sacrifice of a humbled will, ever waiting on God's timing, the sacrifice of 1,000 precious experiences of God's care, God's provision, and God's guidance." And that was the issue. Can David trust in God now or not? This is the greatest test of faith that he had ever faced. And so David lets Saul exit the cave, and then something we might not expect. Verse 5 says, "And afterward, David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe." You know, we might wonder how it is that David felt guilty at this bit of evidence, which would prove that he could have killed Saul but refused. But we should be mindful of what this action signifies. David's cutting off a portion of the royal robe symbolized a transfer of power from the house of Saul to the house of David. Furthermore, according to Numbers 15, all Israelite men were to wear tassels on the bottom of the robe. Numbers 15:39 says, "And it shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the Lord to do them, not to follow after your own heart and your own desires." So cutting off the corner of Saul's robe was like David taking action to cut Saul off from the Lord's kingship, and this was not David's to do. So while he spared Saul's life, David made a symbolic statement to his men, and David immediately repented of it. That was wrong. He had no right to dishonor Saul in this way. Nassal leaves the cave unaware of how close he came to death. There follows a remarkable confrontation between him and David. David went to the edge of the cave and called out after Saul. The cloth in his hand, David provides proof to Saul that he could have lifted up his hand to kill him. And then what follows is the longest recorded quote that we have of David in either 1 or 2 Samuel. We won't read the entire quote, but we will notice several things. First of all, David tells Saul that God is not blessing him. Verse 10, "Behold, this day your eyes have seen how the Lord gave you today into my hand in the cave." Indeed, what David wants Saul to know is that God can deliver you into my hand anytime he wants to. You think that you're in a position of power, but you're not. God gave you into my hand. Now, second, David proclaims his own innocence. Verse 11 says, "I have not sinned against you, though you hunt my life to take it." David is not guilty of the slanderous accusations Saul has leveled against him. He tells them that all his actions have arisen out of his own evil mind, not out of what David has done. Third, David calls upon God to act. Verse 12, "May the Lord judge between me and you. May the Lord avenge me against you, but my hand shall not be against you." You see, David is not saying that all this stuff never mattered. Saul is a wicked man, and he will face the judgment of God, but for his part, David will not lift up his hand against Saul. Fourth, David calls upon God to deliver him from Saul's hand, and by now, it must be clear to Saul that God will do precisely that. And so Saul responds, and before we look at his response, let's remember a passage that many of us have pondered over, and I'm reading from 1 John chapter 5, verses 16 and 17. "If anyone sees his brother committing a sin not leading to death, he shall ask and God will give him life. To those who commit sins that do not lead to death." There is a sin that leads to death, says John. I do not say that we should pray for that. Now, this kind of talk constantly leads to the question of what is the unpardonable sin. Because we don't have the time to talk about this in full here, we might want to view this in the light of a parallel passage found in 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 10. There it reads, "For godly grief produces a repentance that leads to salvation without regret, whereas worldly grief produces death." And it is this that we see in Saul. Worldly grief, the kind of sinning followed by worldly grief that will bring about no change in the trajectory of his life. He will be grieved because in a moment he will see matters for what they truly are. He is hunting David for no reason, and David poses no threat to him at all. But when this is over and Saul goes back to his normal ways of living, which is evil, he will again hunt David down. And now as Saul is about to leave, he acknowledges that David has only repaid him good for evil and then adds a final request. Verses 21 and 22 say, "Swear to me therefore by the Lord that you will not cut off my offspring after me and that you will not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David swore this to Saul. Then Saul and his men went up to the stronghold. You know, David's final act to Saul is to promise him that when God makes him king, he will not harm Saul's family. Saul assumes that David might kill his entire family after he's dead, but David will do no such thing. What Saul does not know is that he and Jonathan have already made an oath. David would later fulfill that oath by taking Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, into his house and treating him as a man of honor in his household. Indeed, David will not lift up his hand against Saul. In all of this, we see David learning to trust in God. Even in the moments when his life is threatened and great evil is being done against him, he is learning not to run ahead of God and to take matters into his own hands. He will trust in the promises of God. Surely in time, God will act. The timing will be God's and not David. You know, if we are going to live lives of significance, we need to learn a vital lesson from David. While David takes all means to defend himself against Saul's attempts against him, he determines that he will not initiate retaliation or strike out at Saul at the appropriate time. For David, this is the life of faith. And for us, this is the example that David leaves us. We must learn to allow God to act in his own time and to be confident and trust in him.
John, just one thing you said earlier. You said, but behind all his careful strategy is the steady hand of God. What does that mean when sometimes we have great plans, but maybe they are not God's plans?
Yeah, I think we are called upon to plan. I mean, we can't just simply, you know, sit back and say, oh, God will do everything. God does do everything, but he invites us to be involved. But I think we need to anticipate that God breaks into our plans at any moment and changes it for his glory. I think that's the lesson.
There are so many practical lessons we can learn from examining this story. But at the heart of it, it's really about having the kind of faith that rests in God's promises, especially when it seems more right to take matters into our own hands. When we are tempted to retaliate and take action against the evil that's been directed at us, are we willing to let God take control? Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. As a ministry determined to impact the lives of individuals and our nation, we are anticipating great things of God. But one thing will remain constant, and that's our steadfast commitment to teaching biblical truth on the air to more people every day. And we are seeing lives changed through this passion to tell the next generation about God and His mighty works. In Romans chapter 10, verse 14 to 15, the Apostle Paul says, "How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news." The gospel is good news indeed. And we are convinced that together with your help, we can ensure that more people hear about Jesus and his life-giving word. So join us to share your story, perhaps about why you tell others about your faith or the importance of the Bible in your life. Or why not get involved by joining as a partner in the Bible teaching endeavor. For more information, visit us at backtothebible.in. Or call us at 9492-440070. Or write to us at info@backtothebible.in. That is info@backtothebible.in.